it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Can't see Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Right now, it's time for the C Block with special guest from StarsThoughts.com. It is Robert Tiffin. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. Good to talk to you guys.
Is it weird that in a time when we're like 30 hours away from the start of the Stars season, a lot of the preseason talks, specifically in the last week, has been, hey, what city are they going to move to?
Yeah, that feels like the business side of sports, right? It's always kind of lurking there, overshadowing everything, and you never know when it's going to rear its ugly head.
Do you get a good sense of which city is the most logical one for this team?
Well, the report's coming out on, 5 o'clock on a Friday, which is always a great time for a news dump like that, right? The report seemed to suggest that Plano had a lot going for it. And, if you believe all the talk about the real estate, I think President and CEO Brad Alberts also, mentioned that in some other reports, the morning news and some other places about, they're looking at how can we get revenue every day of the year. And, sports stadiums these days, it's more about the real estate venture and all the other businesses, the Texas Live stuff we see the Rangers do. And everyone knows Jerry Jones owns half of Arlington at this point, I think. So, you can see how that model would appeal to them and how downtown would be a tougher proposition to find that much property.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Now, Robert, when Glenn Gullitson was originally here, Kevin and I both had a good opportunity to get to know him. He was on with us frequently when we were just a weekend show at the time. And so we got a good vibe of what he was back then. What is your idea of the vibe with him right now, and how do you feel his overall strategy is going to differ from what we've seen in the past with DeBoer?
Yeah, it's interesting just having gotten to know him a little bit myself over the past couple of months since he was introduced here and hired and brought in. He's really upfront about how much he's learned since then. He uses the word green a lot to describe him from back in the day. And he's also been pretty clear that while they don't want to, reinvent the wheel and change a lot because, the people probably know it's a pretty good hockey team. They've made it to the semifinals or third round or Western Conference final, whatever you want to call it. They've made it deep into the playoffs for 3 years in a row. And anyone who remembers Gullitson's first stint knows that was not always a guarantee at all with this team for the past 15 years. So he doesn't want to reinvent the wheel, but they are doing some new things. It's pretty clear to me that part of his kind of interview process was him saying, hey, here's what I'm going to change. And he's been pretty vocal about those things involving the defensive zone and a little bit about the forecheck and maybe even having more of a kind of traditional fourth line than we saw with DeBoer, where they rolled four lines kind of all looking to score.
Now, I know it can be a positive, like you were saying, to come into a really, really good team, but also like, how intimidating can that be knowing, well, they did fire their last coach after he made it to three straight, as you just brought up, Western Conference finals. That feels like that could be a bit overwhelming in the back of your head.
Yeah. On the one hand, he was asked about this, I guess it was a week or two ago now, but they asked him like, will you consider it a failure if you guys don't go all the way or something like that? And he, to his credit, and I have found him so far to be a pretty frank and honest sort of, again, we'll see how it goes as the season gets going, but he's been pretty honest and frank about stuff. And he was pretty clear that, no, the season isn't measured on, whether you get all the way or not. It's about a lot of different things. They've got a really good team, and obviously you don't usually see a coaching change when you've been that successful for 3 years in a row. So he's been pretty vocal about how excited he is because, boy, talk about, it couldn't be any more different than his first stint when he came on kind of knowing the team and the organization was in a pretty tough spot. Whereas opposed to now, he's kind of coming in with, you've got a ready-made cup contender and boom, you get to bring this guy in who just coached for a team that made the Stanley Cup finals, 2 years in a row. So I think he's more excited than intimidated. That's the sense I get because he knows how good this team is. But of course, those expectations are going to be in the background all year long. And, they start off with a pretty tough schedule. So certainly if if they scuffle a little bit early on, I'm sure you'll hear some whispers about, oh boy, I don't know. So we'll see how it goes.
All right. So I'm glad you added the last part, because I know he can say it's not a failure if they don't go all the way. But I, as a fan, can sit here and think it's a failure of a season if they don't go all the way, right?
Yeah, legally, we've not found a way to stop fans from being fans yet. So okay. Until that technology is introduced, you're allowed to do that.
Okay, good, good. I'm glad that you said that. Hey, by the way, you were just talking about, you know, made reference to Gullitson, and we've talked a lot the last couple of days about the Oilers. What did you think about the power move from Connor McDavid to essentially say, all right, everybody, you got 730 days to figure this out, or I'm gone?
Yeah. It's funny. I asked Gullitson about this yesterday, actually. We were talking about a couple of things, and he said he wasn't surprised a bit. For him, it's been really clear. He knows Connor McDavid probably just about as well as any coach in the league. I mean, he was there for 7 years in Edmonton and coaching their power play the whole time, which, you know, most people probably know Connor McDavid's a pretty big part of that power
yep.
play.
Yeah.
He said he wasn't surprised. For him, it really is true. For McDavid, it's all about winning. It's not about the dough. And, you know, just sticking with his same salary, even as we've seen everything else kind of explode in recently around the NHL in terms of salaries, McDavid, it's pretty clear. He's telling the team, okay, I'll give it another shot, and I'm not going to be the reason you can't fill out the edges of the roster because I'm taking some huge cap hit, but I'm also not promising to be here for another decade. You guys got to show that we can actually win here, and if not, I've got a pretty easy exit strategy in a couple of years.
Man, and he took a massive pay cut. Like, I think we all could have easily seen him kind of probably tip the scale at $20 million per year. So for him to pop in at 12.5, that felt like a huge discount.
Yeah, the comparison I've seen is to, you know, Sidney Crosby famously kind of took an $8.7 million salary for a long time to match his number. And I really think that if you're Connor McDavid, you're approaching 30 in your career, you're looking around and you're thinking about the legacy of these other, like, first overall picks.
Yeah.
Who were, like, franchise guys and kind of the guys you're following in the footsteps of. And, you know, whether it's Nate MacKinnon in Colorado, who was on a really good value deal for a while, whether it's Sidney Crosby, even Alex Ovechkin eventually won his cup a little bit older, a little bit later on. I think McDavid doesn't want to be the guy who got his bag and you know, made his pile. But ultimately, you know, the talk is, well, boy, that team sure paid him, but they never could quite surround him with the supporting cast. I think for him, it's all about winning and his legacy at this point in his career. He doesn't want to be the guy who's lurking in 34, 35 and, you know, having to go team by team each year to try to find a cup. He really wants to win, and he's okay with taking a discount to make that a little more bit more possible.
All right. Since you've been covering the team for a good little bit now, I know everybody wants to get paid, but are there Stars players that you think of when you're like, man, that is somebody who would rather die than not win? You know what I'm saying? Like, that has that same level of mentality.
It's funny enough, the Stars only have two Stanley Cup winners on the.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Their roster. One of them is Mikko Rantanen, of course, who won with Colorado a few years ago. But the other one is Tyler Seguin, who won really, really early in his career in Boston. I think it was technically his rookie season. And my read from all the conversations I've had with Tyler Seguin over the past year and change now is that winning a cup in Dallas, and he said this explicitly, winning a cup in Dallas is his biggest goal of his career at this point. He's not thinking about milestones or scoring records or anything. He wants to, I mean, he's been here 12 years now. What, 12?
Has it really been that long?
Yep.
Holy moly.
Yeah, 2013. So I think this will be his 13th season in Dallas. He wants to bring a cup here. He's been here a long time. He said he wants to stay in Texas after his career's done, whenever that is. He really does consider it his home here. Here's where he wants to raise his family. You know, he has a young daughter that he and his wife had last year. So I really do think, I mean, certainly J.D. Bang, everyone would put at the top of that list,
yeah.
who's recovering. He's never won. But aside from those guys who've never won, those veterans kind of getting up there like Ben, I low-key actually think for Tyler Seguin, even though he has one cup under his belt, I think it would mean as much as it would to anyone for him to win one too.
How is Jamie doing?
The update we got is that he's about 2 weeks away, according to Glenn Gulletson, from beginning kind of the work. You have to be shut down. When you get a hole in your lung, apparently it's a big deal and you're not supposed to breathe too hard.
So, right.
Jamie was at the rink yesterday. We saw him just kind of out there in street clothes watching practice. And Gulletson said walking around is about all he can do right now. But of course, it was good to see him there. Gulletson had the great line about the last thing that Jamie Benn wants is sympathy. So he didn't want anyone visiting him when he was in the hospital. And Gulletson said he's pretty sure Jordy Benn, his brother, had to sneak into the hospital just to be allowed to visit Jamie while he was there. So,
and he was probably enraged when he saw him.
Oh, I can only imagine. That was probably the most taxing thing on his lungs, was screaming at his brother. But yeah. Now that he's back around the team, that's a good sign for everyone. And the hope is that in about 2 weeks here, he'll be able to start working his way back.
That's great to hear right there. I am kind of curious how these defensive pairings might look this season and what your expectation is for that group.
Yeah, on defense, it's interesting because Nils Lundqvist, who got hurt about halfway through the season, fans might remember, Jim Nill, the first time he ever traded a first-round pick after almost 9 years of being the Stars GM, he traded a first-round pick to get Nils Lundqvist in 2022, and he just hasn't quite, under Pete DeBoer, he never quite was able to either take that step or something else got in the way, whether, it's the playoffs, and you know what, we have to prioritize more veteran experience or bigger size. Or last year, Lundqvist got injured right around the same time as Heiskanen, which is really unfortunate because that would have been a great chance for Lundqvist to really step up and fill that hole left by Heiskanen. But he got hurt and missed the rest of the season also. So he's going to start on a pair with Thomas Harley, whereas Heiskanen's going to start with Esa Lindell. So splitting up Harley and Heiskanen, at least for the bulk of the game, I'm sure you could see them reunited, late in the game if they're trailing, put kind of a super pairing out there. But those two pairings should be really interesting to see, because if Harley and Lundqvist can actually be a good, stable second pairing, that gives the Stars two really dangerous pairings when you have Heiskanen on one and Harley on the other, who can really move the puck up the ice. So I think that's the plan. And then, of course, you've got Leon Bischel on that third pairing who can just hit anyone through the board.
Yes.
It looks as good as it has in recent years.
Okay, so you just hit that, because when you were talking about the second pairing, you said interesting, and now obviously interesting can flow one distinct way or another, but you just said, if I heard correctly, it looks as good as it probably has the last few years, because it feels like we've had a lot of repetitive conversations about, I don't know about that third liner, I don't know how many blue liners they really got. So you are feeling confident about the defense?
I think so. Now, Chris Tanev, when they got him at the deadline 2 years ago, he was unquestionably that top four piece that really Jim Nill's been looking for a long, long time. A long time they've been looking for that player. Steven Johns, way back in the day, was going to be that player, but of course his career unfortunately ended due to post-concussion headaches and things like that, which is really unfortunate. But they had Tanev briefly, but if you remember, even 2 years ago when they did have Tanev in the playoffs, that's the same playoffs where DeBoer basically chose to just roll five defensemen because Nils Lundqvist was basically playing 2 minutes and then get benched for the rest of the game until they finally brought Alex Petrovic up for the first time to finally kind of round out the pairings. But even then, they didn't have Leon Bischel up quite yet. So now that they have Leon Bischel, who's a really, really promising, a huge young defenseman who can skate, who's really big, he's going to lead the team in hits this year again, I'm sure. And then if Lundqvist, to me, he's the biggest X factor. If he can be a stable second pairing defenseman next to Harley, he doesn't have to be a power play guy or anything like that, then I think the Stars could have three bona fide solid pairings, which they really haven't had for a long time.
Is Bischel the most gigantic human being you've seen in real life on a consistent basis?
I would put him right up there with, I met Darian Hatcher last year.
Oh, yeah.
I would put them on a similar level. I think Hatcher, just there's a little bit more of an aura around him, and he's also just bigger in every sense, right? Hatcher's, Bischel is still just, 21 years old, I think. So he hasn't quite filled out in all the ways, that Hatcher did when we saw him in the prime of his career. But Bischel is huge when you see him, especially if, they're times we see him in the room coming off the ice, he's still in skates.
Oh, yeah.
And the phrase towering over you, that is invented to describe Leon Bischel. Absolutely. He's massive.
I remember seeing Darian Hatcher walking through North Park Mall with his child on his shoulder, and I was terrified for that child. I was like, that is so high up in the air. You know, all this being said, Robert,
will you ask him if he still thinks Darian Hatcher could kick some ass?
Yeah, you know, I mean, he just basically told us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Since this is a public, absolutely, I am not going to disparage Darian Hatcher in any way whatsoever.
I was going to say, does any of this matter, though? The Panthers won the game one last night. Mm. Aren't they just starting their tour right now?
Yeah. The hope, if you're the Stars, the hope you kind of have as far as can anyone else finally climb that mountain, because they've been getting knocked out by Edmonton the last couple of years, and Edmonton's been getting pretty much trounced by Florida the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But if there's hope, it's that Florida is missing a couple pieces. Matthew Tkachuk's going to be out till at least December, and then Alexander Barkov's going to be out for at least most of the season, if not all. They're not sure yet, but Barkov did his ACL and his MCL in practice, actually, during the preseason. So that was a crushing blow for the Panthers. That's their captain and one of their very best players. So the window might be a little bit more open. Of course, you could imagine in Edmonton, they have all the incentive in the world now to win absolutely right now, because if you don't, then McDavid's gone in a couple of years. So it's going to be tough, but I think if you're the Stars, you still feel like your window is pretty wide open. And if anything, the best team in the league just got a little bit more beatable. So that's a little bit of good news.
There we go.
Well, hopefully people have learned by listening to you with us last season and now to kick off this, that you want to be in the loop. StarsThoughts.com is the place to go and the place to go subscribe. I know you're also a regular on with the Spits and Suds podcast. We love having you on, man. Thank you for the time and information.
Anytime, you guys. Always enjoy it.
There you go. Robert Tiffin.
That is so good.
He is. StarsThoughts.com. And he also publicly acknowledged the awesome physical specimen that is Mr. Hatcher.
He is giant, dude.
I loved his answer of, well, I mean, especially...
It's a public forum here. Yeah, I better make sure, forum.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly what people it's not, outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him. And they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right. And the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.